Thank you, Kim. Hello, and welcome to the Beacon Group's new meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Sharon, and I am an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and to respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. Let's take a moment of silence, and I will recite the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not aligned with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend, but we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you are new to AA or new to the Beacon Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you are new or not so new and looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, have had a spiritual experience, and are willing to sponsor, please also put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting, except while the speaker is sharing. Also in the chat, you will find our AA quote of the day. The quote source will always be from AA literature. Our speaker will share for 30 minutes on the step of the day, and then we split into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, please be sure that your environment is quiet, free of distractions. Breakout room discussions end at 12:54, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. And I have asked Kim R., who will be reading the steps on the screen here. Can unmute Kim.
Hi, I'm Kim. I'm an alcoholic. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you, Kim. Appreciate it, Kim R. And thank you, Kim T., for the screen share. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
T, Today we will hear a talk on step one. Again, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Please give a warm welcome to Kevin H. from New York, New York. Welcome, Kevin.
Am I coming through, Sharon? You can hear me okay? Great. In case my connection softens, let me know and I'll kill my camera. Hopefully that won't be the case, but let me know. Good afternoon to everyone. My name is Kevin Heaney. I am an alcoholic of the doomed and hopeless variety. And that's not my cute saying. That comes from the doctor's opinion in the big book. I have very strong feelings about the big book. I also have very strong feelings about the Beacon Group, which I'm going to address in a second. And my take is, if the speaker is not reflecting the truth of the big book, it would be perfectly okay for someone in the meeting to say, thank you very much, sir or madam, step down. We will now have someone who actually does practice the principles out of the big book. If you go to a shul, a Jewish temple, and you start quoting the New Testament, they'll ask you to stop. If you sit with a Freudian therapist and you want to discuss triggers, they'll tell you, no, that's not how we work here. This is AA. Hopefully we practice the 12 steps and have an awakening. I just want to speak to the Beacon Group. My friend Cynthia is somewhere, hopefully on her way to the ocean in Asbury Park. And Arissa, I had texted them last night to say I was going to be here. I don't know who else was founding members of this group. I want to thank this group from the bottom of my heart. When Corona came and this group appeared, I was suffering, as many of us were, from terrible fear. I didn't know where the world was going to go. I didn't know if I would die or people I loved would die. I lived 10 blocks away from a major New York hospital, and the sound of the ambulance was constant. At one point in time, they had the corpses outside of the hospital because the morgue couldn't hold them anymore. They had point there was rioting in New York and windows of stores were broken. I thought the world was going to fall apart. And the word fear was written in my heart. And then the word care, the care of God. The Beacon Group was one of the anchors, one of the absolute anchors. I don't get here as often as I would like. And I tell everyone I know who's a member of this fellowship, if you want to find the truth of AA, come to the Beacon Group. They're pitching fire from the pitcher's mound up there. The speaker getters and the speakers have been amazing. And I want to thank you for helping me to stay sober, helping me to stay sane, helping me to grow. Last week, the 11-step speaker, and Andy, I think you're on the call. You've got to send me her talk. I'm not good with computers, so please help me with that if you would. She referenced two-way prayer. Let me get to my story. The quote of the day is very appropriate because it speaks of the action of alcohol on chronic alcoholics. I'm an alcoholic of the doomed and hopeless variety. That's from the big book. I am hopeless because I have an allergy that I cannot control. I once was one of those hit it and quit it drinkers. I once was one of those people who could drink everyone under the table. I don't know if these are antiquated sayings that people don't even use anymore, if they're from the 1930s, but I had what was called a wooden leg. All of these things should have said, you got a serious problem and you better get help right away, boy. But it didn't. I started drinking in eighth grade. I drank till I was 29 years old. As Clancy once said, that life was the problem and alcohol was the first solution. And then alcohol became a part of the problem. For somebody like me, I drank because life on life's terms was unbearable. If I hadn't found alcohol in eighth grade, I'd have killed myself at 15 or I'd have killed my father at 18. This is not an ACOA qualification. I come from Irish Catholic people. My people are from the Bronx and Harlem, if you know New York. My grandfathers died of the disease. My father and mother were skipped generation, but my father had all of the violence and all of the danger of an active drunk. He just didn't need to be drunk to do it. but I'm here because of the reaction that I get from alcohol. And the reaction is twofold. First, I feel better when drinking than I ever felt before. And I will tell you this, if I were to have a large gin and tonic or six of them, I would feel better than I do for all of my prayer and meditation. However, my life would catch fire and burn to the ground within 3 days or 3 weeks, but that would surely happen. I know that to be truth. I love booze. I work in a treatment facility. Actually, I'm one of the foremost treatment people in the East Coast. I have buried more men and women from the disease of addiction than wartime generals buried during the Second or First War. And I can tell you this, I know all of the sciences. I'm in favor of harm reduction for those who don't want it. But if you suffer from what I have, which is an illness of mind and body, such as Bob and Bill had, the only thing that will work will be coming to these rooms, falling on my knees, begging you folks and God to help me, and then starting to take action. Because you see, I'm a chronic alcoholic. Alcohol makes me feel better than I've ever felt, and then it takes everything away. I cannot, knowing that makes no difference. And in Bill's story, he makes it clear, self-knowledge avails me nothing. It is the work I must do. In order to not be an alcoholic, by the time I was 19, I began to worry about it. I went to a college in Massachusetts called Holy Cross. It was all male. So to make up for not having girls, they let us have bars in every dormitory. So I would be drunk every night of the week. I spent my junior year in England, where they have laws that close the pubs in the middle of the afternoon. So there I learned to get drunk twice a day. And then return to New York, where we drink 24 hours a day. And that's where the problem started. To not be an alcoholic, I did everything I humanly could to not be. I ran 3-7 times a week. I ate brown rice, tofu, and raw vegetables. I drank cranberry juice when it was only people on Cape Cod knew what it was. I was using 3 different forms of prayer and meditation. I went back to using the rosary bead from my childhood, although I'd been an atheist from the time I was 12 on. I was in psychotherapy on the couch twice a week. I was doing all of this stuff and nothing worked. I swam, the lifeguard who I swam with my mile a day used to say, because he later came to our fellowship, he said, during the day we pass through the fluids and at night we pass the fluids through us. One of the greatest truths I've ever heard in AA was I love booze. I loved what it did for me. It made me a whole person. I'd have killed myself or my father, but booze came along. And then booze did the terrible thing that booze does. It stopped working so well. I didn't have a lot of blackouts, but there were those times in
we're losing you, Kevin.
Is there a problem?
Okay. Yes, we're losing you.
I'm dropping my video then, if that's okay, to see if it keeps up.
Thank you, Kevin.
Of course, I apologize for the bad connection. I was doing all these things to not be an alcoholic, except the only thing that works. My God has a sense of humor. So I went to graduate school, and my first internship, I went to social work school, was at a drug and alcohol private hospital in Connecticut, a fancy pants, rich person's hospital. And they put me on the drug and alcohol unit. And there I got exposed to the fellowship, to the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I hear people in the room say magic. No, when you're talking about what happens in AA, it's not magic. Magic is what a dude with a top hat and a rabbit does. Miracle is what God does in the heart of men and women to let them get free. Anyhow, so they Monday mornings, they'd send me down to the AA meeting. And I saw the most magical, wondrous, miraculous thing. I saw men and women sit in a circle and tell the truth. And it was exquisite. And then this is the best part. They'd leave the AA meeting, they'd go back onto the unit, and they'd proceed to lie for the rest of the day. They'd lie to their doctors, they'd lie to the nurses, they'd lie to their therapists, they'd lie to the family therapists. Now, lying is something I know about. Telling the truth is not something, I'd read about it in books because I was an English major, but I'd never actually seen people do it because I come from an Irish Catholic family. where when we wanted to tell the truth, we used silence, sarcasm, and scorn and humor. Nobody told the truth. We worked around it in that way. But I saw men and women tell the truth and then lie. And it was this miracle light of sitting in an AA meeting. That was in 1976. It's never changed. And I got to join you people, but I held out for the longest time. I did everything in my human power not to be an alcoholic. I told you all those things I did, but I was. And then one day, I was going to lose the woman I loved. I was going to lose the job I had. I was going to lose the apartment. I was going to lose everything. And I knew I'd wind up living on the street. And I didn't have some romantic notion that I'd die right away. I knew that it would, the torture would go on forever. And I knew I would drink every day for the rest of my life. And that at best, I'd have one or two good drunks a year, but I would drink nonstop and I would lose everything. And a woman walked into my office, and I had misused this. She was my administrative assistant. I'd misused this woman every way I could. And she said, "What's wrong with you?" And I was in therapy, so I had all my issues at my fingertips. So I told her all of my issues. And then I said the last thing, "And I think I'm drinking a little too much." And she stood up and she pulled her sleeves back and she held her arms out to me like Jesus on the cross. And from her wrist to her elbow on both arms were deep, deep Frankenstein stitches. And she held her arms out and she said, "Remember when I went away in February?" This is June now. And I said, "Yeah, you were on a sailing ship in Barbados." She said, "I wasn't on a sailing ship. I was locked in a psych hospital." She said, "I tore my veins open when I was drunk. I tried to kill myself." And she held her arms out to me, these scarred arms. And when she would marry 3 years later in Princeton, New Jersey, she had to wear those elbow length gloves that women used to wear. And she held her arms out and she said, "I'm a drunk, but I'm not drinking today. Will you go to AA with me tonight?" And there was a writer in the 70s named Kurt Vonnegut. And Kurt Vonnegut would say, "Unusual travel plans are dancing lessons from God." And my God was inviting me to dance. And I went to a meeting with her, and that was the 13th day of June in 1982, and I have never had a drink since. However, the bad news is I didn't know that marijuana, as we used to call it back then, pot, was not okay. I figured an Irish Catholic kid comes to AA and stops drinking, they got a winner. So let me ruin your morning for you. If you are still smoking weed, as you call it now, or taking any mood-altering substance without a doctor's bona fide prescription, you need to talk to your sponsor about changing your day count. It took me 2.5 years to realize that the 11th day of my anniversary, not June, but they say you cannot build a house on a shaky foundation and you can't build a recovery on a lie. It was more important for me to give up that time than to hold on to the lie. It took a long time for me to get involved in what is not just a fellowship, but the program. And I'll get to that in a moment. But the first thing I did was I came to meetings. And at first I came when it was convenient. And then the mother who raised me after my mom died when I was 8, she got cancer and she was dying. And the pain of it was too much for me. And suddenly I was coming to meetings every time I could. And suddenly I went to 4 meetings a week when it was convenient, to 2 to 3 meetings a day. And then I heard someone say, "If we can't get a secretary for this meeting, we may have to close the meeting." And I couldn't let you close a meeting because I needed those meetings so much. So I got involved in service. I created meetings in New York City at the 79th Street Workshop. I started the early morning weekend meetings. I gave service whenever I could. I gave a try to the steps, but I had a big issue with GOD, so I basically didn't get anywhere on my step work. And 2 years went by, and I was 2 years dry, and I was don't drink and go to the meetings, which is okay for some folks, but not okay for a drunk like me of the doomed and hopeless variety. And I got a job on Wall Street, which I thought was going to make me rich and famous. I was getting everything I wanted, and I had a great trophy girlfriend who would be a great trophy wife. And I woke up one morning in August, 2.5 years in the fellowship, and I wanted to kill myself. And I went to the 79th Street Workshop and I met a dude who would become my best friend, my buddy. He was never formally my sponsor, but he taught me the big book. And he taught me there's 197 promises in a book, but the number one promise is like the bank robber's note, do what I say and nobody gets hurt. And the promises the big book has come true for me when I do the work. And when I stop doing the work, the promises stop coming true. It's just like booze. I got to keep drinking to stay drunk. I got to keep in spiritual activity to stay sober and serene and at peace. And he taught me the big book. And for that, I'm incredibly grateful. I've had a multitude of sponsors. Some of them died on me. Some of them let me go. Some I moved away from. And I've had a multitude of sponsorship. I've never stopped going to meeting. I've never stopped being sponsored. I've never stopped doing service. But let me be really clear about this. I am powerless over alcohol, and my life is unmanageable, and that will never change. I will never be able to drink safely. But as Chuck Chamberlain would say, the very thing I wanted from the alcohol or the booze or the sugar or the sex, I have within my own heart because I have a relationship with the God of my understanding. And my life is unmanageable. And nowhere in our literature does it say, having gotten to this point in the step work, you will now be able to manage your life. I will always need the kindness of you people, the gentleness of a higher power, and I will need to be giving it away to keep it. People say there's no musts in AA. You've not read the big book because there happen to be 39 musts, 42 nevers, and as a sponsee pointed out 2 years ago, 76 willings, which means willing is more important than never or must. But the first time must appears in the book is in one of the forewords, and Bill says that he realized to save his life, he must do this and others must do likewise. I have to be involved in self-forgetting because you see, I am always on the first step. There is no finish line to my mind in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a high wire balancing act for all eternity. It is my job to practice these steps. My sponsor says it very simply. Her job is to take me through the book, and then I'm to call every week with emotional disturbances and run 4 through 9, or what I call matchbook inventories, to stay current with this. When Bill Wilson wrote to Carl Jung in 62, speaking of Ebby, he said that he knew that he must have what that man had or die. And what did that man have? An awakening. Those of you who know the AA history, you'll know that Ebby really was never that strongly sober, but he carried the message. He lit the fire as Bill carried the message to us. I have to keep feeding the flames. My sponsor, Joe, tells me, Kevin, not everything that happens in the world is for the good. But everything that happens can be used for the good if I put it in the spiritual principles. AA tells me one of the terrible promises is that our problems, we think, it says, are of our own making. On 55, it talks about we see men and women rise above their problems, a spiritual liberation, because the problem is in my head. The problem is me. And the problem is, I think you're the enemy. And I don't think that there's a God who loves me. I believe the hardest step to work is step two. I know I'm here for step one, but let me just say this. It is a constant battle for me to believe that there is a God and that there is a God who loves me and that there is a God who has a job for me. And my job is to not drink, carry this message, and show kindness, shed kindness everywhere I can. To the cashier, to the snotty teenagers who don't get out of the way of the subway door when it opens, to anyone and everyone. And my job is to be the best brother, husband, citizen that I can. My sponsor tells me in the big book, the issue is not what does it say? She tells me it's what does it mean? How do I bring it into my life? And how do I make my life better by carrying this message? My first sponsor, Sparky, his favorite AA slogan was, I see things differently. And those of you who are old and have been around the rooms for a while, we used to have slogans. Now we have psychobabble truths. And I'm sorry, I'm a big believer in telling the truth, but the old slogans said so much more. And his favorite was, I see things differently. And I see things differently is the simplest explanation of a psychic change. To see things differently is to see I'm not a victim. To see things differently is to see I'm a volunteer. To see things differently is to see I'm often a perpetrator. And to see things differently is to see that God couldn't, what if he were sought? She, God, will forgive me, wants to forgive me, has already forgiven me. Chuck Chamberlain used to say, if I've truly taken 6 and 7, there's no space for guilt or shame. If I've truly asked God for forgiveness, then it's over. Then I do the best I can and try not to do it again. I had a sponsor named Bill for many years, and Bill would say, Kevin, the answer to all of your problems is 110% investment in the fellowship, in the program, in service, in being a sponsee, and being a service, being a sponsor. And then Bill would say to me, Kevin, you're an effed up alcoholic, but we have a program specifically designed for people like you. And the answer is always more program. I've returned from, my wife and I did a pilgrimage in Spain. And we were out in exquisite, beautiful countryside. But our journey in AA is an inside journey. Our journey in AA is, how do I show up every day to have the defects removed? The 24-hour book is not conference approved, but it's actually better AA writing than the other stuff. I'm sorry, I have a very strong opinion. And it says today that God does not withhold itself. My sponsor Sparky used to say, if God seems distant, who moved? I turn my back on God. I turn my back on AA. Bill at the bottom of page 12 says, I had needed and wanted God and he came. And then he says, but the sense of God's presence was soon blotted out by worldly clamors, mostly those within. In other words, I get distracted. You people are not distant. High power is not distant. I get caught up in self. And the purpose of AA, Bill would say to me, Kevin, AA is about suicide or egocide. Egocide is by working the 12 steps so that I can be powerless over alcohol. I can be unable to manage, but I can have a great life. I believe the purpose of AA is not to drink, to serve, and to be a bright comet going across a bleak black night for the world to see there's a better way. I would have nothing without you people. Tennessee Williams was a major addict and alcoholic, but his quote from Streetcar Named Desire, Blanche DuBois says, I've always relied on the kindness of strangers. I've always relied on the kindness of you people. From the bottom of my heart, I thank you very much. If I could ever do anything to help you, please call me. I'll put my number in the chat. Bye-bye.